Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission here at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Well, you'd probably have to be living under a rock to not have noticed everything that's going on in our country right now, specifically around the Black Lives Matter movement, the protests that are going on in the streets, specifically on the issue of police brutality, but really on the issue of racism in general. And for a while now, Growing Leaders has been trying to figure out what do we say, how do we take part in this conversation, and the place where we landed, as Tim and I talked about this, was just to land in a position of listening. And so today we've got a special episode for you where we want to listen. And we have gathered three amazing Black men and women who are speaking to us today from their point of view about what's going on in our country, how this is particularly affecting young Black men and women, and what we can do about it. No matter where you find yourself, I believe there's something that you can do about it. And so I'm really excited to share this conversation between Dr. Tim Elmore and these three leaders. Really quick, let me introduce them to you. On the call, we've got Vicki Wright Hamilton, who's has 20 years of experience in working in the business sector. She's an executive, particularly knowledgeable in technology, and now the founder of VWH Consulting, a really fantastic leader with so much insight. She actually grew up with parents who were a part of the civil rights movement in the 60s, and so she has a ton of experience and wisdom to share. We also have with us CJ Stewart, who's one of our very, very great friends. He is a former Chicago Cub professional baseball player, and now he's also the founder of LEAD, which is an organization in downtown Atlanta that empowers young men in impoverished areas of Atlanta, helping them in developing their athletics, but also their academics, civic engagement, commerce, some amazing things that they're doing. And then last but not least, we have Cam, who is a really amazing young leader who was actually an intern for us at Growing Leaders, and he is now a student at the University of Michigan. So three fantastic leaders. These men and women have amazing things to say, and so let's listen in on the conversation between Tim Elmore and these three leaders.
Well, I'm with three individuals today that I greatly admire. And I'm going to do my best not to embarrass them, but I know them all, and I had them come on because I just felt like they had a story to tell on this very, very important issue. So before we do anything else, could I just ask the three of you just to introduce yourself? Cam, would you mind starting? Just introduce yourself so our listeners can know who's on the line.
Yeah, of course. Hello, everyone. My name is Cameron Turner. Most people just call me Cam. I'm a student. I'm a junior at the University of Michigan. Go Blue. Pursuing a double major in organizational psychology and sociology. I've had the pleasure with working with Dr. Elmore and Growing Leaders for a few years now, all throughout high school. And then I was an intern at GL last summer. So happy to be here. Happy to help.
Great. Thanks, Cam. CJ, talk about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm excited to be here with you all. And thank you so much, Tim, for this assignment. Very excited about this. And so I was born and raised here in Atlanta. I'm a Grady baby. And for all intents and purposes, what that means is that I was born in poverty in this city of Atlanta. Had two very young parents, and baseball was my ticket out of poverty. My two heroes as a child was Jackie Robinson and Dr. King. And so it's pretty cool that today now I get an opportunity to lead a nonprofit organization in Atlanta, where I get a chance to use some of those things that I learned about those two men, who actually both were born in Georgia as well.
How about that?
I'm living the dream, and that's kind of certified by being here with you.
Awesome. Thanks, CJ. Appreciate it. Vicki, would you introduce yourself?
Sure. First of all, thank you, Tim, for allowing me the opportunity to have this impactful conversation. I'm Vicki Wright Hamilton. I am the CEO and founder of VWH Consulting. We focus on change management in the technology areas, and I'm also a leadership coach. I'm an Air Force brat. I am the proud grandmother of one and one on the way. I am the mother of two grown Black men that are doing extremely well, and I'm very, very proud of. And my husband and I have been in Atlanta for almost 24 years. And I am very excited to share some insights as I've had a very colorful background.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'm anxious to get to that. So the three of you, I'm going to just, we'll just kind of volley back and forth, but you were kind enough to say yes to my invitation to come and talk about not only the times we're in right now, but just race and justice and equality, the things that's on the mind of everyone right now, it seems like. And I just wanted your input on these. So I'm going to rifle through some questions, just jump in as you want to. But let's begin with this one. It seems like a large part of the conversation around race is about empathy. Could you start by talking about what was it like as you were growing up and you first realized that race and racial injustice might be playing a role in your life? I know that probably didn't take very long, but just talk about when it first hit you, OMG, this is a thing. Who would like to start?
I can start.
Okay.
All right. So being born and raised in Atlanta, I lived in a community called Bankhead, which is still a impoverished community. And my grandmother was a domestic worker, and she worked in the Buckhead community, which is very affluent. And so, you know, just looking at television, and I mean, I never had a reason to go to Buckhead, and we didn't have any money to go. So those are kind of some cues that I didn't belong. But as I got older and started playing baseball, and we start to travel into some of the more affluent communities in Atlanta, I start to really feel the difference. So I saw the difference on television. I mean, on television, to be African American is to be poor, to be white is to be wealthy. Nobody said anything, but I just saw it.
Yeah.
And then as I started playing baseball as a youth, I started to feel it. But I really think I felt it for the first time when I played college baseball, and one of my roommates had a Confederate flag. And at that time in college at Georgia State University, I started to understand where, you know, people were starting to talk about race relations. Had a bit of a scuffle with my teammate as I was questioning him about it. And then, so that was the first time that point I was about 18 years old, but that's when I felt it.
Wow. Wow. Thanks, CJ. Vicky?
Well, it's interesting. I first knew about race as a young child. My mother and father were very involved in the civil rights movement. I can still remember as a child where we were at home and the KKK was shooting in our windows and my parents had their guns on the couch and we hit the deck. So I was exposed very, very young. My mother went to school with Martin Luther King. So I grew up around a lot of the civil rights movements and all of that. As I carried on as an adult, it continued to permeate itself because I decided to go in the field of technology, which is a predominantly white male area. And so I was the only Black, only female, and that carried a lot of its challenges. And I had some very direct discriminatory things to occur through my tenure of working. And so it was very real to me.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that was really young. I mean, you probably weren't barely in elementary school when you realized what was going on, weren't you?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. I was very, very young. I think the most prevalent incident that I can remember in detail is not only that time of the shooting, but shortly after that, we were taking a trip and we were coming through Georgia and my father got pulled over for a ticket. And so the cop made us all followed to go to the police station. And when we walked in, my father went in with them and then we walked in behind him and he was beating my father over the head with a billy club.
Oh, gosh.
And it was because he had asked him for his license and he said, let me have your license. And he said, yeah, okay. And he said, no, it's yes, sir, here, nigger.
Oh,
gosh. So that was very real. And so it's... It's things that you learn and you grow from, but they're vivid.
Yeah. Wow. Cam, how about you? What would you say to that? You were in Gwinnett County growing up.
Yeah, well, so I actually started, I was born and raised in Decatur, okay. Decatur where it's greater. So I grew up there, and it was that shift in moving around the state of Georgia. For anyone who knows anything about the state of Georgia or the city of Atlanta, you know, Atlanta is one of the most diverse, progressive places in the nation. But if you go, you know, 30 minutes outside of the metro Atlanta area, outside of the perimeter, you know, we're at where KKK rallies are being held and where, you know, white supremacy is very prevalent. You know, Confederate flags flying all over the place. And so it wasn't until I moved, my family and I moved from Decatur into Gwinnett. We first lived in Lawrenceville and actually went to Grayson High School in Gwinnett. And, you know, if you go a little further into Loganville, you know, you're surrounded by Confederate flags. You know, I remember a time when, you know, I'm stopped at a light and, you know, a red lifted truck pulls up next to me and you know, I'm called the N-word, told I don't belong here because of my skin. And it's like, it's crazy because that was 5 minutes from my high school.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I can go 15 minutes in the other direction and be in downtown Atlanta, one of the most diverse progressive places. And so just the night and day of that was when I really, just moving around the state of Georgia, was when I really was able to realize the impact of my race and how others viewed my race.
Yeah. So here's a question. Lots of people today seem to be comparing Black Lives Matter that we've seen the last several years to the 1960s civil rights movement. And Vicky, like you, I remember those days back in the 60s, over 50 years ago. How would you say it's alike based on what you remember of or have read about back in the 60s? And how is it different and how is it the same? I just love for you to think out loud and process what's the same and what's different. Vicky,
I guess I'll yield my time. Yeah. I would just say it. I've only been around since 99, so I'm only 20 years. So I will yield my time to the more experienced people in this chat.
Vicky, you want to jump in?
Sure. So I think when we start talking about Black Lives Matter and we talk about the civil rights movement, the similarities are we're still talking about Black people. There's no difference. So over 50 years later, we're still having the same kinds of conversations. The things that I think are different is that in the civil rights, you knew where you stood. It was very overt. You didn't belong, or you had to go somewhere different. It wasn't inclusive. You just knew it. There was no gray line. Now we're getting to the point where we have evolved. And so we may not have as much overt racism as we do covert racism. And I think what's happening today is that the younger generations and people who are tired and who have been through this and the protests and all the rest of that is all about the fact that we're not going to stay quiet. Laws changed in our favor. Things happen in our favor. And we're not going to allow you to discredit all of the fight that went through from our ancestors and others to get us to where we are today. So I think that these conversations are still happening because they haven't completely been resolved, because we've been able to covertly deal with them and not put them on the table. And I think that from a children's perspective, from kids, from young adults, they're getting to the point where they're like, wait a minute. This is wrong. You teach me that these are the laws and this is what I'm supposed to do. And then you do not hold accountability and consequences. So I think that that's a lot of the synergies. We've actually made a complete circle. And I can't believe that over 50 years later, we're still talking about Blacks. You notice it's not people of color, it's Blacks, because that's who's being impacted today.
Yeah, I think that was well put, spot on. CJ, anything you want to add?
So I was born in 1976, so I didn't really have much experience with the civil rights movement, but I will say that it was great that a lot of my educators in the Atlanta public school system were a part of it. And so they definitely shared a strong sense of pride for us as children. Even though, you know, what I was disappointed in as a child is it was our Black teachers were given a strong affirmations, but in the presence of a white person that kind of left. I mean, they kind of shied away from it. But then when I think about the civil rights movement compared to now, even when you think about the nonviolence movement, from my studies of Dr. King, the nonviolence movement was very critical because, as Vicky said, the racism was so covert. So you were going to be met with dogs and water holes. I mean, so the Black Lives Matter movement is not being met with that. So, you know, the nonviolence movement is good, but it was stronger then because I think the appeal was to moderate whites to see that, okay, here are these Black people that aren't doing anything, they aren't causing trouble, but yet trouble is being brought upon them. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit tougher to do nowadays when the police doesn't spray water holes.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to get off script for just a second, but I'd love maybe one or two of you to weigh in on this. Obviously, we didn't have social media back in the 60s, but Dr. King very wisely leveraged television coverage for that to be caught. Like you just said, CJ, I watched on TV from Cincinnati, Ohio, what was happening. I thought, what are they doing down there? And Dr. King was willing to take the hits, and so were many others, to say, at least you know now. So here's my big question. Do you feel like there's been some progress in that sense? There's social media today, so we're all posting, it seems like. And I know that seems, I don't know, superficial, but at least there's a greater sense of capturing things on a phone, you know, film and video. Cam, you want to jump in? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, obviously, like I said earlier, I don't have much experience with the civil rights movement, only from what I've learned in history classes, being only 20 years old. But I don't know how it felt back then, but I imagine it feels really different now. You know, I don't think you've ever seen a movement, let alone a racial movement, you know, be shown and supported in all 50 states, be shown and supported internationally the way that that we're seeing this one, be shown and supported. And so I think it, you know, it does leverage our social media use and the fact that we have all this information at our fingertips. And people are I think are finally using it for good, for awareness, for support. You know, now, yes, you can post stuff. Yes, you can be an ally in that way, but there's much more to do beyond posting that. And I think that's the thing that we want people to hear is that, yes, show your support. Yes, spread awareness. Yes, spread links to, you know, petitions and other things and donation sites. But, you know, there's so much more to be done. In terms of educating yourselves and your family and others who may not get it yet. But I think it's being seen in a way that we haven't seen before.
Yeah. I'm encouraged by that. But again, I have my angle. I want to hear from you. Let me go to this next question because I think this might be very lively conversation. So in your experience, so that you're only speaking for yourself, how does race affect young men and women of color in this country? The listeners to this podcast are probably parents, teachers, coaches, employers, people that care about the next generation. In your eyes, CJ, you work with young men. How is this affecting them now as young people? What issues are they facing in their life? And what, how is it unique? How's their minority status unique? And then how can adults help the matter? You want to start us, CJ?
I can, and I will start by saying that so racism is not an event, it's a structure.
Yeah.
And it's about power, and before it becomes about people, it is about power. So we just start right there, put a pin there, racism, structure, power.
Yeah.
So the root word for racism is race. So when you start to break us out by race, now it becomes about people. And so when I played baseball, I was pretty fast, and so I beat a lot of people in races. And so in that race, most times I knew I was going to finish first, and whoever was racing me was going to be behind me. So racism in America, which I believe is perfect, unfortunately, it is absolutely perfect. If you are Black, you are losing. We've been losing from the beginning. So we got to understand that. So it's about power. It's about people. We serve 350 Black boys from Atlanta Public Schools that are living at or below the poverty level, that are also struggling with grades, attendance, and behavior. And we use baseball as a vehicle to help them overcome three curveballs that threaten their life: crime, poverty, and racism. So yesterday, Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan was at our practice.
Wow.
I'm very good friends with Senator Isaacson. I know the police chief, Erica Shields. I know a lot of people. So with that being said, if one of my ambassadors is unarmed and gets shot, I mean, we wouldn't even have an opportunity to riot and loot. It'll get dealt with quickly.
Yeah.
Because I have access to power. So that's the promise that we're making to our ambassadors, is that membership has benefits. So you want to be with us. But I would also challenge Black boys now, too. If you cannot be a part of an organization that is going to protect you as a Black male, especially if you're living in poverty, don't waste your time with those organizations. To be Black and poor in this city is to be taken advantage of for the rest of your life. And I'll just say lastly, I mean, we do need to pray for our city, but we also need to deal with the people that prey on our city.
Mm. Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's going to, okay, we need to pick up more there in just a minute on that, CJ. Vicky, any thoughts from you on this question, how is this affecting the emerging generation?
I think it's affecting the emerging generation in a lot of ways. You know, even when I think of my own household, you know, I've got millennials on both ends of the spectrum. And the things that have occurred and have happened to them. My oldest one has been pulled over 38 times and has been shot at 22 times, guns wow. pulled out 22 times. Just because of the color of his skin. My yeah. youngest son has been pulled over and, you know, gets guns pulled out because he has tattoos. It's about the perception. And I live in Northern Atlanta, right? So yeah. I'm in a suburb. I'm not, yeah. you know, I'm not in the city. And it doesn't matter. The thing is that when it exists all around you. Now, you know, one of the things we have started out as a losing point, just as CJ said, and getting access to power and people that believe in you is important. And unfortunately, all of us everybody doesn't have that access.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when you don't have that access and you don't have those people that have power in your corner, it becomes even harder. You know, I tell my boys every day and always have, even to, the, you know, and they're men today, but even as they would walk out the door, don't forget you're a Black man first in whatever you do. And remember that judgment may be against you. Do whatever you have to do to come home safely. We can deal with the wrong as long as you're alive.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to deal with the wrong with you dead.
Yeah.
So we had to teach, yeah. we had to have different kinds of conversations. I love what CJ said. We got to pray for our city, but we got to pray for those who pray on it.
Yeah.
And that comes in all kinds, shapes, sizes, and fashion.
Yeah. Vicky, I'm floored. You've talked to me about your sons before and how proud you are of them. It just baffles me that they would have that experience shot at and pulled over. I remember Ricky served on our team for a while as our graphic artist. And the first time I had lunch with him, and Ricky's a very sharp, white collar, smart college graduate. And I said, Ricky, what was it like being Black growing up here? And he said, Tim, nobody's ever asked me that question before. And I thought, shame on us. And when I say us, I mean white people for not asking that. But you know what he told me? He said, Tim, I always follow the rules. I just knew I had to follow the rules. And he said, a number of times I would get pulled over. He said, one time I picked up my little sister at the bowling alley because she was with her friends. And I just pulled up to wait for her. And I was swarmed by police.
Mm-hmm.
I just had to learn how to respond to that. And I thought, dead gummit.
That's right.
I've had that experience. Now I've gotten pulled over, but I needed to be pulled over. That's a whole other story. But I don't know what any of you have to say back to that. Cam, you've said you felt it a little bit even in college, just feeling that your color's a little different. I want you to keep it real here. Anything you want to fire back?
Yeah, of course. So obviously, you know, you've been a teacher, Dr. Elmer, for a while now. You know, you teach teachers, you teach educators. So in the realm of education, it's hard as well. You know, I think and my experiences in high school and college have been a little different as well. First, I want to kind of talk about the word privilege. Privilege, I think, gets very bad rap and a very negative connotation nowadays. Privilege doesn't mean that your life hasn't been hard. It doesn't mean that you haven't gone through some stuff. It doesn't mean that you haven't had your valleys. It just means that you are not being, you're not at a disadvantage because of your race if you don't have racial privilege. So I'm saying that in terms of in high school, you know, I think in terms of my academic stance, I was privileged. You know, I was, you know, at the top of my class. I was involved in a bunch of leadership organizations. I led a few clubs. So teachers definitely treated me differently yeah. as a Black kid than other Black kids who yeah. may not have been performing as well, who may not have been, yeah. You know, a star athlete, or who may not have been in leadership roles. I saw that change very quickly when I got into college. You know, I go to the University of Michigan. I love the school. But, you know, it's a predominantly white institution. It's a PWI. The Black population is less than 5% there. May I remind you, there's 48,000 undergrads, 6,000 wow. in my class alone. You know, so 5%, there's maybe, what, 300? I did the math earlier in the year, like 320 Black kids. And I'm pretty sure I know all of them on campus. you know, because it's such a tight-knit community. And you know, even if you don't know them, it's like, I've seen you around, because you stick out. You know, you stick out when you're one of three Black people in a lecture hall full of 400 kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, it's hard to be seen in that way. It's hard to be in a group project and the other three white kids in your group feel that you're incapable or you're inferior just because they don't know you or your experiences. Yeah. So that's where the difference was for me, because in high school, you know, I didn't have to deal with that as much. And that's a privilege in myself, because, you know, I was in the positions that I was in. Teachers respected me. Teachers gave me the same love that they would give to maybe a white kid who had all the other advantages. And so when I got to college, it was like, they don't know me. They don't care about me. They won't show it because I'm one of the few. And so in the realm of education, that's where I've experienced that sense of discrimination the most, for sure.
Yeah. So I've got a couple more questions that I really want to camp on now, and let's talk about what do we do with what we have right now. This days and days and days of protest, and I think it should go on. I personally believe it needs to, until we see change, policy change, behavioral change. I want you to know I'm for it. I have protested, I have donated, I've written blogs, and here we're doing a podcast. I want to be a part of the solution, but I know I'm an upper middle class white male that can only imagine what it's been like for so, so many. So here's my two big questions. I want all of you to share whatever insight you have. What message do you believe protesters are trying to send? So that's one. What could we all do to hear them better? And then, are there any additional resources we should be reading, listening to? What would you say, hey, you guys ought to listen to this, watch this. I just watched 13th on Netflix last night. What a great program that is, that explains how we got here. But okay, I want to just, CJ, Cam, Vicky, what, first of all, let's go back to that first question. I'm sorry, I just rifled three questions at you. What message do you believe protesters are trying to send? When you think about it from your viewpoint, what do you think the big message is that they're trying to send?
I will, for me, I believe that they're saying that we are mad as hell. And, yeah. and quite frankly, until you get mad as hell, things really won't get done. I mean, as a follower of Christ, I think about the second coming of Jesus Christ. It is not going to be like the first time. Yeah. So anger is not a sin. Yeah. To be angry is not a sin. So I think that's the message. When I think about what to do is I think about three things. Number one, be a present. So to be white, if you're going to be with me, you need to be a gift to me. Yeah. So Tim, you are a gift. You know, you, when you come to me as a gift, what I appreciate is you giving me a list of things that you can do, because you are empathetic, and to be empathetic is to suffer with. So you have a good enough understanding about what I need so that you're not just saying, well, what can I do? I need you to know a little bit more about yourself before you just do something that shallow, like bring me on this podcast. So yeah. Number one, we need white people to be a present. Number two, we need you to be present. Being present doesn't necessarily mean like in person. Even though most of the rallies that I've gone to have been a bunch of white people there. In fact, I was in Buckhead this weekend, and you know, the chants were, you know, hands up, don't shoot, you know, say his name, George Floyd, and all of the different names. I was silent the whole time. And the white guys around me, I mean, they were losing their voice. One white guy lost his voice. Another one picked up. And I was like, you know what? This is great. I'm tired of talking. Like, you wear your voice out. So, you know, be a present, be present. And then the last thing is be a partner. And that's where the empathy comes through. Suffer with me. So several white people have reached out to me and they'll say, well, CJ, you know, what can I do? And I say, well, pick a number, 10, 20, 30, or 40. So Tim, I'll let you pick a number. Which one? 10, 20, 30, or 40?
10.
Okay, 10. So for the next 10 days, I want you to be concerned about me. You wake up in the morning as early as you can. You need to try to beat me and you need to find out how you can get 10 minutes of my time all day. I don't care what's going on with your wife. I don't care what's going on with your children. You find a way to get on my schedule for 10 minutes. FaceTime, text message, whatever it is. And if I'm not available, then I'm going to give you a specific prayer request for me that I want you to fast and pray over. So 10 minutes out of your day, if I'm not available, you fast and pray on this specific prayer. So that has been very helpful to me. And I've got quite a few people that are doing that for me.
Love that. That's very practical. Vicky, Cam, what do you think?
Well, I will say, first of all, who can follow CJ after that? when you talk about be a gift, you know, and terms of giving opportunities and to be present. What I will say is that to piggyback off of what he was talking about, I think the opportunities that we have is we need you to continue to talk to others that look like you because we're tired of talking to others that look like you. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. It's hard. We need you to carry that glass of water. And be able to have that conversation and to understand with that empathy about what it means and what you will stand up for and what you won't. I find it real interesting when people will send you a note and say, oh, I support you, but they're not willing to go on social media and tell the world that it's wrong and that I stand behind, you know, I stand behind you. And so behaviors speak a lot. Actions speak a lot in terms of giving that support. The second thing that I think that you can do is allow a platform for us to stand on. Elevate us. Elevate us and give us an opportunity. Give us that opportunity to have that voice. Give us that opportunity to be heard. Give us that opportunity for the next chance, the next growth, the next thing that's out there. Because when you talk about, you know, moving forward, you know, this racism thing of the cops is only just a segment of what's going on.
Yeah, that's right.
People are tired of not getting growth opportunities. People are tired of not getting leadership. People are tired of being the only ones on boards, the only ones sitting at the boardroom table. You know, it's one thing when you're sitting at a table and you get a plate and you're able to eat, but you're not able to say grace. I don't want to hear what you got to say, but you can sit here and eat with us. You know, so it's a matter of really, you know, opening those doors, which is why, you know, I read another practical one today that I just love. Somebody said, I'm going to use my platform to promote a Black person every day for their capabilities and what they can do. So that if someone is interested in hiring, call me for a reference. And I'll be that reference. But they actually posted about that individual.
I love
these
that.
These are things about opening doors and giving opportunities, you know, and making a difference. So I think that, you know, the race is just the one piece of it. But there's a whole other element that are just as equally important that's causing the fight.
Yeah.
I'm tired of talking about the same thing.
Yeah. Well, and I got to think, Vicky, if you saw white people, even just with you while you're working, you go, I got a little more energy now because I'm not alone. I got some folks next to me. I feel that way.
So absolutely.
Just come next to me. Yeah. Good.
Supporting you.
Yeah. Cam, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah. First off, Vicky and CJ, y'all done killed that. So props to you guys. But no, I mean, they both hit the nail on the head. Like, we're exhausted. You know, I think the Black community has been exhausted. You know, mind you, not only have we been going through a global pandemic, you know, not only have, you know, some of us are still taking classes, some of us are still working. You know, it's a lot to happen at once. And, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement isn't new. You know, yeah. It may be new to the other side, other members outside the Black community, because it's getting so much attention. But, you know, this has been going on for almost 10 years now. I use this. I was in a podcast with my church the other day about a similar topic. And we, in an organization I was a part of in high school, had a motto. It was learn, grow, and serve. So those three words can be applied to, I feel, most things in our lives, especially this one. That first piece, learning. I think each person has a responsibility on their own to do the research, to want to understand, to want to ask questions. You know, I think for students my age, for kids my age, y'all ain't doing nothing anyway. You're in the house, you know, like go pick up a book, go read something, go watch something, and help yourself learn more. That second piece, growing, that's not only for yourself, that's with others. I think a lot of times for students my age, having those conversations with your peers. That means having those conversations with your parents sometimes who may not understand. And those can be tough things, but they're necessary. And then that last piece is serving, finding ways that work for you. For me, it's been appearing on podcasts. It's been using my voice. It's been using my platform. But not everyone has those opportunities. Not everyone has those resources. So being able to use what you have, to use your voice and make your voice heard. Another thing that I wanted to highlight is that this isn't a Black versus white thing. This isn't a Democrat versus Republican thing. This is a human versus the inhumane treatment of other humans thing. Yeah. And so I just can't emphasize that enough, because I think people get so wrapped up in, oh, I can't support this because these are my political views. Oh, I can't support this because my other members of my race think this. It's not about that, y'all. Like, it's about your brothers and sisters on this earth. And so how can we help each other have equality and have the best lives for everyone else that lives on here on this earth with us? So
I love that.
That's all I had to say. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. You know, my son, Jonathan, and his wife live out in LA, and he just texted me and said he just participated in a protest. Him and two other friends, they were in LA, 25,000 people.
Yeah.
He said, I could hardly find a Black person. It was a bunch of us.
And so that's why I think this feels different, because it's it's not just us. It's the allies. And that's what, I feel like that's, I mean, I can't speak for white folk, but I feel like that's what other white people need to see.
Yeah, is their
own people going and helping. You know, it's not just the Black people out here, because if it were, we'd have hoses, we'd have dogs, it would be more violent than it is, I believe. And so I think that's very important.
Well, and the other cool thing he said was, wasn't a police officer in sight. And he said that was a cool thing. Mm-hmm. Nobody felt like they needed to govern us or, you know, whatever. It was just 25,000. He showed me a video. Wow. It was crazy. But I thought maybe, just maybe, we can move the needle a little bit this time. So before we close, I want to give each of you one last chance. If you want to say anything, like a word of counsel, a word of encouragement, a word of admonishment, I just want to give you a chance before we sign off. Any thoughts?
I'll start with, you got to read How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram Kennedy.
Okay.
He really does a great job of just breaking down either you're racist or anti-racist. I mean, those are the two distinctions.
Wow.
And then I would also just say that start conversations with conviction.
That's right.
For me, you know, it's just important before I can understand your head and work with you hand in hand. Like, I need to know your heart.
Yeah.
So it is okay. And that is that moves it from discussion to dialogue. I'm a city boy and never got into fishing and that kind of stuff. My wife Kelly is a country girl, so she's done all that. the fishing, but I do know that if I wanted to catch a big fish, it would not be in shallow water.
Yeah,
and I got to go deep to catch those big fish. So start conversations from a place of conviction.
I love that. By the way, I'm going to say this because you didn't, CJ. One of the things I admire about you is you did start in a very hard, impoverished childhood, but you fought your way, used your gift. Your dream was to play for the Chicago Cubs organization, and you did. You played pro baseball and now are using that very gift to give back. So thank you for not giving up on the fight to move forward and now returning that gift to dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of young men who are going to write you thank you notes when they're 30 and hopefully donating to to CJ Stewart. Okay. Vicki, what are your thoughts? Any last thoughts before we sign up?
Yes. One of the things I'm an advocate for is that is for change. Yeah. And I truly believe that we can have this change. But humanity comes first. We all bleed red.
Yeah.
Every last one of us bleed red. And if we can get to the point of accepting each person as an individual and get out of this pigmentation of their skin, and we can get to the point of self-acknowledgement of our unbiases, our unconscious biases that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we may have been raised in that kind of environment, mm-hmm. but the only way to turn the tide is you've got to stand up at some point.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing. I have been so impressed by the number of young white adults that are facing their families talking about, this is wrong. You raised me this way, but this is wrong. And their willingness to change the tide. So I say, don't give up. Don't stop. We need to come together as a people. I know we can do it. Yeah. I know that there can be change. We've made small changes. I know that they can come further. But it has to come from the desire of wanting the change, to be a part of the change and accepting of the change so that we can move forward. And just remember, again, it's not just about race. You know, I think as Cam said, it's much deeper than that.
Yeah.
So on any level where you can contribute and help, please do so, because it'll only make it for a better world for all of us to live in.
Yeah. And our children. Yeah.
That's right.
Good. Thanks. Cam, you want to back clean up here?
Yeah. I'm not a baseball guy, but I got that reference.
Yeah. Good.
I'm learning. You know, it's a real simple message, man. It's just like less hate, more love. You know, I think oftentimes we get so caught up in our own egotistical views and our own, how can I help myself progress? I believe, you know, you can't rise yourself unless you're lifting others up with you. So I think it's important to just do your part as an individual. Do your part to learn. Do your part to grow yourself and others, and then do your part to serve those who need service. You know, as you know, Timothy Alexander, one of Growing Leader speakers, you know, he has a saying, it don't gotta be easy, it's gotta be possible. And so, you know, it's I think this is the thing where it's not going to be easy. But it has to be possible that we get equality. It has to be possible that we have change. And I feel like I said before, I don't know how the civil rights movement of the 60s felt, but this definitely just feels different. You know, I think we finally have extended that rope across the lane to our other brothers and sisters who are not in the Black community, who are finally starting to understand and finally starting to be able to empathize with us. And so it's just the idea of less hate, more love, and doing your part so that we come out of this stronger together, for sure.
Cam, you are an example of a person in the emerging generation that I love and that is showing us that even though you might have been called snowflake generation, they got no grit, I'm seeing Gen Z stand up. I mean, I'm seeing them stand up, and they are not letting go. So maybe they're the anchor man in the relay race saying, we are not going to lose this race.
Right.
Yeah.
So we just got to keep the momentum, man. Keep the momentum.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. CJ, Vicki, Cam, thanks for joining me today. It's been an honor for me to just hear from you. And CJ, I'm going to call you. I'm going to call you because you told me. All right. Thanks, guys, for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to today's conversation. I want to reiterate and remind you of two resources that were mentioned during the conversation. The first one was Tim talked about a documentary called 13th. I believe it's exclusively on Netflix, but it's really fantastic. It's about the history of racism following the Civil War and the Emancipation Proclamation. It's a really fantastic feature-length documentary. Again, that's on Netflix, and it's called 13th. Also, CJ mentioned a book called How to Be an Anti-Racist. We're going to link to that book in the show notes. I encourage you read that as well. And lastly, we don't need you to follow us, Growing Leaders, this week. Instead, if you're a white person out there, I just want to encourage you, spend a week not posting online and instead choose to follow a person of color and just listen this week. I think listening has become a really good way for us to all sort of step into this moment and really receive what we need to receive in this moment. So I want to encourage you to do that this week. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.